And you're tuned in once again to the Jewish Activist Network right here on AM 620.
Thank you for being with us once again. Our number is 718-569-0921. That's 718-569-0921. We are being heard right now streaming on the web. You can go to JewishActivistNetwork.com. You can click on the top. And we have a show tonight about a fellow. His name is Rabbi Melamed. We just like to speak. We have some interesting news coming out of Israel over the past week or two, and it's going on even until now. And that is that Rabbi Melamed has come out with statements basically saying that soldiers should not listen to the army if they are told to uproot settlements. And there's been a big brouhaha over that. And actually, his yeshiva has been de-hesderized. In other words, Barak, the defense minister, he demanded that he immediately change what he said, and he didn't change what he said, and they came and they de-hesderized it. It's an interesting development that you have different people coming on different sides, and many people are defending him. And a few of the articles that we have, which if you'd like to get an email with all the links, you can give us, you could send an email to media@JewishActivistNetwork.com. We'll be able to put you on our mailing list. We have, so let me just read a few different clips. So let's take a look first at this clip. It says, let's see, rabbis, loyalty to God over army. So this from the news.
Where is this article from?
This is in the Jerusalem Post.
All right, Jerusalem Post.
And it says that the five rabbis who made up, well, I'll just start from the beginning, I'll just read one or two paragraphs. Concerning the infighting amongst yeshiva heads, I tear apart the entire head of the framework, because what happened was is that people were they didn't know what to do, because the Hezder gets a lot of money from the army. They tie them together with the army, and they're considered to be independent. The rabbi's supposed to be independent. He's supposed to be able to make decisions and supposed to say what's right, what's wrong, independently without coercion.
Let me see if I'm following this. In other words, you have yeshivas, schools in Eretz Yisrael, where you're calling in from the land of Israel, and these are generally post high school institutions of education, places of education where Jewish young men study Torah, and it's run by a rabbi. And at the same time, these young men also serve in the army. They have a dual program. They're serving in the army, and they're also learning this yeshiva, and the yeshiva is receiving money. So the conflict is, on the one hand, the rabbi, the rav of this yeshiva, has to teach Torah as has been handed down to us through the generations. On the other hand, he's receiving money from the army. Is that the basic conflict here?
Yes, the yeshiva gets the funding, and also the students are able to take care of their required army service by going partially to the army and partially to the yeshiva.
Okay.
Usually we go to the army now for, let's say, 1.5 to 2 years. About usually army is 3 years. And Hezder, they would do, instead of the 3 years, they do about 1.5 to 2 years. I'm not exactly sure. It probably depends. And they would also go to Hezder for about a year and a half. Okay. And maybe even more. I think the Hezder program is longer. The total program is longer than just what the army would have been.
Okay.
And they comprise a very large portion of the army. And they're actually well known to be one of the best fighting forces, the most motivated of the people in the army at this point. And there's a lot of pressure because they're being told at times to expel their own families. And if not their own families, other people that they know that they're not supposed to be doing, because this is not what the army's function is. And that's really what the question that has come out to be.
Okay.
So the question is, Joe, what do you think they should do in such a situation?
Well, that's,
I guess we could ask the audience that. What would you do if you were part of an army and they used the army for political reasons and to tell you to uproot people that are living just like yourself, living in Israel. For whatever reason, it's on the political, the winds. Obama doesn't want it to be there. Not just Obama, any, but whether it's from the outside or from the inside. And they do not want it to be, for whatever reason, they want to move it for the sake of a peace process. Would you go? And would you go and follow orders to do such a thing? That's the real question here. It's not for the defense, using the army, not for the defense of the country, but literally for political reasons to get rid of uproot houses and homes, similar homes to that what these people live in. Okay. Now, let me just take a... Okay, so let me just take a look. We're going to read a little bit out of Barak Aus, Rabbi Mohammed's Yeshiva from Hezer program. This one is actually Arut Sheva. Defense Minister Ehud Barak announced Sunday night, this was before, that he is throwing out the Har Bracha Yeshiva. The name of the Yeshiva is Har Bracha. Har Bracha is Hebrew, it means Mountain of Blessing. Headed by Rabbi Eliezer Mohammed from the Hezer Yeshiva program, Barak charged the rabbis with, quote, undermining democratic principles and, quote, inciting students to refuse IDF orders to expel Jews from their homes. So we have interesting language there, undermining democracy. I don't know. To me, democracy means that you can give your opinion, and you could tell your, and you could, and people do not have to go and serve in an army that is doing what they're not allowed to do. I don't know what democracy has to do with this. But anyways, the Hezer Yeshiva program allows young men to sacrifice, to serve in the IDF for up to 2 years instead of the usual three, and to learn at Yeshiva for at least 3 years. The organization of the Hezer Yeshiva has not commented on the historic decision by the defense minister. So this is after when the defense minister went and de-Hezderized the Yeshiva, at least for now. Now, okay, another article. Head of Merkaz Harav Yeshiva. Merkaz Harav lends support to Rabbi Mohammed. So we're seeing some fallout. The head of Merkaz Harav Yeshiva, Rabbi Yaakov Shapira, has joined in the growing list of rabbis who have expressed their support for Rabbi Eliezer Mohammed, head of Har Bracha, as the yeshiva, in a crisis between that yeshiva and the Ministry of Defense. Rabbi Shapiro sent a letter Friday to the heads of the Hezer Yeshivas countrywide in which he asked them to stand behind Rabbi Mohammed after the Defense Ministry announced it would no longer include Har Bracha Yeshiva in the Hezer arrangement. Okay, we have a caller.
Hi. Yeah, my question to the Hezer rabbis is, they're really in a very pivotal, they play a very pivotal role in the Israeli society in general. I think as far from a secular point of view, they contribute to the country much more than the secular Jews. The rate of army dropouts in the secular communities is 1 out of 5, which is 20%, whereas in the national religious community, it's close to zero. And, my question is, they're being thrown around by the secular community and discriminated against literally very often, especially when the settlers is more or less the national religious community. So why are they not using their weight, I mean the national religious community, to sort of...
Who should be using the weight? The left of the national religious community.
What?
I'm just not following it. I'm not following what you're saying. Who should be using the
weight? There is right to that. The religious national, what you call the Leumi, but the Leumi, they're the ones who have the best soldiers in the army. And percentage-wise, they have more soldiers than percentage-wise than the secular community. And so why are they being so, letting themselves be thrown around so much when they have so much power and they can literally topple, I'm not saying they should do it, but they can threaten to topple anything if they really want, because they could just...
Right. I'll tell you why. The main reason is that there is, and I think it's a mistake, there's an undercurrent, it's partially a mistake, there's an undercurrent of feeling that if the army is weak, then tomorrow or immediately they'll be vulnerable to outside attack. So there's a very big reluctance to weaken the army, at, even though this is happening. But you do have a lot of, you do have within the camp, you do have a lot of disagreements. But there's more and more people who are coming over to what you're saying, because they see what's going on. It's getting to the point that they're being threatened with all types of extreme force. One of the articles they told us about extreme force that was threatened against anybody who starts building settlements or starts building. You know, they made a housing freeze, a regular housing freeze on places that have permits that they're about to build. And people who bought land and have children, and there's a lot of friction going on because of that.
So it's taking some rabbi, libeling any rabbi, like as if it's some second-class citizen. I mean, this is ridiculous. I mean, when a secular...
100%.
A secular holder does something wrong,
no question.
Blame the school in which he started. I mean, this is crazy. I don't know. It's just, they're being thrown around like literally like second-class citizens.
Right. And that's why it's important that, that people, that we speak up and we talk about it. And that's exactly why we're talking about it. And I'm just, I'm going to read a little article. It says here, AFSI applauds heads of the yeshiva rabbis. I thought that was very nice. AFSI stands for American Friends of Safe Israel. They're a group over here in America. I mean, I happen to be right now in Israel. And, but AFSI is in the United States. And I thought it's nice to mention that they came out and they're supporting the Ezra rabbis. It's also, you have to support people who do things that are right, because otherwise they're all alone.
I am sort of surprised that this Rabbi Melamed took a tough stance, as opposed to in past situations, most rabbis are very apologetic and just apologize and finish. And
You have to understand that there's a conflict, because they do want the country to be strong, and they are mixed in, and they do feel that there is a very important thing. Even if somebody's not religious, even if the country's not religious, there's still a positive thing that to support to have a Jewish country. Hopefully later on will become religious. That's the hashkafa, not like the Haredim who have nothing to do at all. So with that hashkafa though, now it's coming, but still they believe in. And keeping the Torah, so you do have now, they're like arguments over here. So we have now that I just told you that the Merkaz Arab came out in support of him. The chief rabbi at Tzfat, he said all rabbis must oppose Barak's decision. So just
Barak's decision.
Down the line while I read this. Chief rabbi at Tzfat, Rabbi Shmuel Eliyahu.
Before you continue, clarify for us what is Barak's decision that there is a policy by the government, the current government in Israel, to uproot many Jewish communities in Judea?
No. His decision we're talking about the simple decision to oust Rabbi Melamed's yeshiva.
In other words, students who would now study at Rabbi Melamed's yeshiva would not also be in a Hesder program, and his yeshiva.
They would have to go to another Hesder yeshiva, but they would not get their army, it would not be good for the army. And they would not, and of course, as yeshiva would not receive whatever funding it would receive.
So Rabbi Melamed made a really tough decision, if I may say, because his yeshiva now is defunded, basically. He's unless he has other
at sources. At this point, the truth is, we always have to see what's happening as you know things over here change by the day.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
well, he showed them that everything is money.
Yeah.
The question over here is really the right the people to the right for rabbis to be able to speak their minds. That's really
there's very little freedom of speech in Israel. Very little.
Yeah. So let me just continue over here to see what Rabbi Eliyahu says. He will work to recruit all rabbis of the country against Barak's decision. The Yeshua Rabbis Council of Judea and Samaria, co-head of Rabbi Dov Lior of Kiryat Arba, and Rabbi Zalman Melamed of Beit El, has already announced its support of Yeshivat Har Baruch and its dean's right and obligation to teach Torah without the army telling him what not to say. Rabbi Eliyahu similarly said that Barak has no right to attempt to undermine the independence of the yeshivot. The Torah sages, quote, the Torah sages throughout the generations were willing to sacrifice themselves in order to maintain the independence of those who hand down halachic rulings, he said. Quote, we expect the chief rabbinate to to call upon all rabbis from all camps to stand in a united front against the defense minister's intentions. So that's, which is a very, I think it's positive.
Has the chief rabbi issued a statement?
Has the rabbinate? That I don't know. Now they're going to, they want the chief rabbinate of Israel to issue a statement. I don't know if they did. So, it's positive. So then we, again, we have the AFSI. AFSI applause has the yeshiva rabbis. So that's the one I saw that's from outside. Quote, Defense Minister Ehud Barak made a serious mistake when he punished Rabbi Eliezer Mohammed, head of the Har Baruch as the yeshiva, by removing the yeshiva from the military program.
I just want to remind the audience that Ehud Barak, he was being accused, this rabbi, of inciting soldiers to not be good soldiers. This Barak, everyone should remember, when he was an officer and there was a disaster, there was an explosion or something, he ran away instead of staying with the soldiers.
Right, but
he's just coward telling everyone what to...
Aside from that, I don't have the evidence on that. But the point...
Okay, but in general, the problem is that everybody's recycled. Barak was there before, he's back again. It's a very, very closed system.
It seems to me that...
And it's very difficult for people from the outset to get in because they cut out a lot of people. They make it very hard to get in.
I'm trying...
Sometimes it's a real threat, though. They'll literally make a law. Like, everybody knows there's Rabbi Meir Kahana law, so you couldn't run.
I'm trying to look at this from the point of view of if I were defense minister, and I was not observant, I was not schooled in halacha or the idea or the concept of Torah. So I look out and I see all of a sudden that I have my soldiers being told by someone that they respect more than me that they should not follow an order. And I don't really maybe understand why this order rather than another order. So my first reaction would be just to take it plainly and say these are soldiers who are being told not to follow orders. Perhaps, I'm just saying, I'm not trying to be Malamed Schus on Barak.
So can I respond to that? Can I respond to that, please?
Go ahead.
Yes, it could be it's not proper, but there are much more severe crimes committed in the army, and there's very little reaction to it. You know, everything has to be in proportion. You have Nazis in the army, you have people who spray swastikas in the army. Nothing is done about that. This, suddenly, everyone goes crazy over it. That's the problem.
And I would add that this is what they told. This is one of the big things. The question is, do you do something that you know is wrong in general? This is, you remember, the main argument of the Nazi soldiers later on was that I was told to do it by my, it was a command. I was ordered. I was in the army. So this is something which is well known over here, and people say, no, of course you have to know, you have to do what's right. We're talking about people going in and the army being used for not the defense of the country, but for basically offense against its own citizens, to go and to take them out of their homes.
All right, let me take the other side. Let's the people who are in power, such in the current government in Israel, such as the prime minister, the defense minister, they're privy to state secrets and information. You know, let's just say for the sake of argument, and again, this is an extreme case, but not so extreme considering the current administration here in the United States. Let's say the United States has said, if you do not uproot those settlements, we would, in a future war, which we would encourage implicitly or passively encourage the Arabs to take on, we would encourage them to attack you, because how can we support you when you have these settlements? Let's just say the president has said outright to the prime minister and the defense minister, a threat like that, that the United States would support the Arabs and encourage them to attack the Jews in Israel. God save us if it should come to something like that. So,
okay, so what I would say.
So, in other words, you're saying it's a political decision, but again, maybe the government is also making a political decision with other information, and they don't have the courage, or they didn't decide.
They're being like the capos who helped them out.
What I would respond is that this is the old argument of not raising your voice any time. This is the old argument of by World War II when Jewish people didn't get up and make a lot of noise and train themselves to the White House fence. They were told, do it quietly because you're going to make things worse. There's going to be anti-Semitism in the United States. Who knows what's going to happen? That's a standard argument of secret evidence. First of all, if that was the case, it has to be out in the open. They should say that this is what the United States said. That's first of all. Let me just give the number out. 718-569-0921. 718-569-0921. For our call in number. Now, so right away, I can't accept it. It doesn't, we should never accept anything like that, that maybe do something done in secret, because we have enough experience that it's all baloney. Second of all, even if they did say it, there's a time that these people did not join the army for that reason. For example, there are many people who would join the army because they feel pride. They want to join the army. Otherwise, they wouldn't join the army. If they're not joining the army, that's not what they joined the army for. So they have a right. Do you know how many leftists are there right now in Israel that are refusing to serve because, for the other reason, because of, they say, an occupation, quote unquote? There are many people who don't serve in the army. And if there's no exception over here. If they start going beyond the line, they can't expect somebody in the army to go and take families like their own families, their own communities, or another community, either their own community or the next door community, and start throwing them out of their houses because of a political reason. They can't expect it to be doing it. So for those two reasons, I don't see it.
The argument always made is that the government, you have to respect the government decision. There's got to be some limit as to how far the government can go. I mean, they can't just do anything. That's really what this means.
Right. Now, over here, the real question that we're talking about is now the academic freedom of rabbis. Will the academic freedom of rabbis be banned? And are the rabbis to be forbidden for speaking the truth? This is something which we've spoke about on the show, also in terms of politics, in terms of people running for office where they'll just ban people. So you're right. I agree. This is a very important question. Thank you so much for your call.
Bye.
And please call again.
Call to.
Hi, Saul.
Hi, good evening. Am I on the air?
You're on the air.
Yeah, hi. I would like to argue that that for those soldiers that feel they can't carry out an order of evacuating Jews from their home, which I fully understand and probably would agree with, I think they should be conscientious objectors. However, once they do enlist or plan on enlisting in an army, when you have a situation like a mutiny type of thing, you don't have an army. There's really no choice.
What should they do? They should not. I just want to understand what you're saying. They shouldn't be in the army in the first place. No, there's a collapse. So that's like 20% of the army, I think.
If an individual knows that they're going to have orders that they can, in good conscience, carry out, they should make it known that they're conscientious objectors and not enlist.
You have a lot of like that. You have a lot of people that they tell them that they don't. We're not going to be able to follow these orders.
But these,
and a lot of times, what they do is they put them in other places in the army. In other words, let's say they wouldn't put them right in the front lines when people are overruling people.
Let me just say something.
It's so difficult because they're enabling others to do it.
These men cannot be conscientious objectors because, in order to be a conscientious objector, I saw a website recently on this. For the army, the way it's set up for the army in the land of Israel right now is that to be a conscientious objector, someone has to actually say that they would never fight under any circumstances. And certainly, according to halacha, there are many circumstances where one is obligated to fight.
Well, I'm saying if they know that one of the orders is going to evacuate people from their homes and they can't do it, then they should take the stance that whatever it takes, they should say the magic words that will get them out of the army. But once they're in the army, they can't disobey their commanding officer unless it's an illegal or immoral order.
Well, don't they feel it is illegal?
That's what they're considering this. I mean, you just put that interesting that caveat. I don't understand.
Evacuating people from their homes, as long as they don't kill them, it's not an illegal or immoral act.
Why do you say that?
It's an immoral policy, and it's wrong, and I disagree with it, and I'm against the whole state of Israel because they have people like Barak and such. However, it's not an illegal or immoral act to order a soldier.
You're equating immoral with killing.
Killing or rape or something of that nature is absolutely immoral.
I don't know why you have that definition of immoral. I think many people would say it's immoral to life. You ever hear of life, liberty, and property?
Yeah, but let me ask you a question.
One of them.
Yeah, I understand. But let me ask you, let's say here in the United States, there's something called eminent domain. And let's say the people living in a certain area don't want their houses cleared for a certain project. Don't you think the New York City or state police will come in and evacuate them if they refuse to listen to a lawful order to evacuate?
Well, let me ask you a question back, Saul. What if the President of the United States ordered the Army to do an evacuation, eminent domain, but the domain we were talking about would be the U.S. Capitol and say, evacuate the congressmen who are standing in the way of my implementing my policy? I think what Rabbi Melamed is saying, I don't mean to speak for him, but my understanding is that he's saying that the government is uprooting these settlements particularly because the people in these settlements are opposed to the policies of the current government, and therefore if you destroy these communities, uproot them, spread the people into other communities in the land of Israel, their political power will be diminished, and therefore they can go ahead and do what they want to do. That's what it means when we say that this is political. They're uprooting the people specifically so the people in power are doing it so that they can remain in power.
I understand. Nice that you said the word Malamed Chus. It's very appropriate. Malamed.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Malamed.
Yeah. Okay, good night.
You're tuned in?
We'll see what happens, where this goes. But it's a slow learning process for many in the Dati Lumi camp. It's a slow learning process. They've always been very loath to do anything to go head to head with the government. And the reason they've been loath is for ideological reasons and also for maybe for fear too, but definitely ideological reasons. I think that's the main reason. But this happened with Rabbi Kahana when Rabbi Kahana was going and explaining that this country is on the way, is on the wrong path. Because of the Arab birth rate, because of the Arab having a map that doesn't have Israel there, it's clear what they say. And therefore, you have a lot of people, even in the right religious camp, who said no, you know, it's the wrong thing to do ideologically. The Arabs should live here too; they should be citizens. You have some people saying that, even though the Arabs want to kill those people, they're right there. And right where they're living, they're having so much trouble. They're being uprooted from their own communities because of that right now. It's a direct cause. It's a slow learning process. Sometimes some people could see things clear. It's obvious. You could see what's going on. And there are people, I guess, who don't. And things like this have to happen, unfortunately. See what's going on right in front of them.
It's interesting that you mentioned ideological, because it's been explained to me that some people maintain that the current government in Israel, the state of Israel, is not just a convenient form of government, because every country needs a government. You need to have water, electricity, roads, and so on. People see this as the beginning of the redemption. And therefore, for them, if that's part of their hashkafa, their outlook on Torah, if they hold that the current government is part of the redemption, they're caught in an uncomfortable position. If the current government is against them, and at the same time, if they were to defend themselves, they would be going against their own belief system to say this government is corrupt and wrong and has to be eliminated.
Right. Well, you have other. It doesn't have to necessarily be. I mean, they definitely feel that they could change the government, right? They could go and try to vote. They vote their own people.
But you've demonstrated many times on the air, we've talked about it, this government is not going to be changed by voting. The voting is practically a fraud. It's the same people.
Oh, yeah, right, right. You know, the question is, now that you're not changing it. And by the way, as far as that fraud goes, some of these people were not necessarily against that fraud when it happened because unfortunately, they didn't like what Rabbi Kahana said, some of them, and also because he was entrenching on their power also. We're going to continue online. I just want to let people know that you can go to JewishActivistNetwork.com and second, there are two links as far as streaming. One is streaming, which is for the first half hour and in general, and another one is, and the second one is for after the show. You can take a look there. Our phone numbers, 718-569-0921, media@JewishActivistNetwork.com. Wish you a good night.